This is Politico Energy. Stay tuned after the show for a message from Chevron. We're talking about diversity on today's show. Our energy reporters spoke to sources from diverse backgrounds for their reporting and will be representing some of what they heard. If you have a voice or perspective you think we should hear from, email us. We'd love to hear from you. We're at audio@politico.com.
Now, right now in the United States, if you're Black or Asian or Latino, the air that you breathe is more polluted or could be more polluted than if you happen to be white.
Minority communities are among the most severely affected by climate change and pollution all across the country.
We're here in Galena Park. This plant is known as the stinky one because it always smells. When I was a kid, we'd drive through here and I would hold my breath as long as I could so I wouldn't have to smell it.
I wake up in the mornings and can't breathe.
Still, when you think about popular environmental leaders and the history of the movement, it turns out people of color are massively underrepresented.
And if you put in the words into Google, what is an environmentalist? On the first page under images, this is what you come up with. Basically some images. I don't see any color. You see trees. You see people hugging trees. You see whiteness. Well, let's go to the second page.
Today.
Because I'm like, surely I can find something else if I keep scrolling, but no.
You got to remember the environmental movement from, I think, almost the beginning. It was considered kind of a niche, white-dominated movement. You know, basically people who had the privilege and the wherewithal to be worried about, you know, the trees. We had Silent Spring come in. That galvanized a lot of people, but it was mainly people who had the wherewithal to kind of pay attention to that. And it wasn't just the environmental movement. I mean, I think it's fair to say most policy movements in the U.S. until maybe a couple decades ago, or, you know, even a decade ago, were pretty siloed. So, you know, civil rights groups kind of handled civil rights, environmental groups handled the environmental issues. And it wasn't really until maybe the last few years that, you know, the groups are making inroads with each other to kind of connect issues, draw on each other's strengths and experience.
Politico's Gavin Bade, Zach Coleman, and Ben Lefebvre on how the protests over police brutality are reshaping the environmental movement. It's Thursday, June 4th, and I'm your host, Kelsey Tamburino. So, Gavin, can you tell me how environmental groups have changed since their beginnings?
Environmentalist groups in general are more diverse than they were when they were founded, you know, in the 60s and 70s. But especially the large environmental groups are still predominantly white. So we had talked to a lot of people for this article who, to me, had expressed some frustration with what they called a white power structure in the environmental movement that persists today. Their power structures, a lot of the people, the leadership people at these organizations are still white. Their funding sources are still white. And a lot of times, the people they speak to in how they message, who they message to, what they message about, what our sources told us is they feel like that is another aspect of the white power structure. They're often messaging to white audiences.
And Zach, what are some ways that you found these organizations are trying to change based on your reporting?
They're trying to do better. They're hiring more people of color to bring their world experiences and their voices to these institutions. But these are big, long-tenured companies that don't shift or pivot easily. And you bring in a few voices that starts to make a difference, but it has not necessarily led to a wholesale culture change, but there are things that are different about the culture. So you do see a concerted effort to hear and understand voices that had not traditionally been part of the environmental movement, but it's still a long road ahead. And I was talking to Jen Ellen Arroz, who is a high-ranking official at the League of Conservation Voters. She admitted as much that, look, we're doing better, but we still have a long way to go.
And Gavin and Ben, what do protesters out in the streets right now want the environmental groups and climate activists to do at a time like this?
One of the things that our sources in this article mentioned was that right now, the first thing that the environmental movement can do is stop and say Black Lives Matter. This is a thing that a lot of the people, you know, people of color in the movement who we've talked to have said, you need to make clear right now that you need to uplift Black lives, you need to say Black Lives Matter, and you need to lend, you know, your organizing to this movement and this movement's ends, right? It's like a lot of people said, you know, you need to show up for us if you want us to end up showing up for you, right? And these issues, a lot of people said to us, and I'm always talking from my sources' standpoints here, all of these issues are interconnected, that right now you stand up against police brutality, against communities of color, against Black communities, because a lot of those same power structures are the ones that enable Black communities to be sited in high pollution areas, near petrochemical facilities, near oil refineries.
And I think we've seen some of that with the anti-pipeline movement. I mean, from folks I talk to, that's really one issue where a lot of different environmental and racial justice and, you know, treaty rights, all these movements kind of gel together. So you do see some of the, I think especially the pipeline protests and the younger groups kind of being a little bit more quick on the uptake on this.
Zach, is there any fear among environmental groups and activists that including racial equality and ending police brutality could endanger their overall success on the environmental front?
No, I think that they would feel the opposite. I think they would feel that you would risk solving climate change if you didn't solve racial inequality. And, you know, this is actually an interesting criticism that some lawmakers have made in the past about the League of Conservation Voters scorecard expanding to include other elements that are not on their face absolutely environmental, but certainly are tangential to the issue. You know, a lot of lawmakers say, well, that's not environmental. How am I going to score well on these quote unquote liberal policies that, you know, don't have anything to do with the environment? But the point is that, you know, for a lot of people, this has everything to do with the environment. If you don't think about the inequities that minority communities face, then you will never get enough people to accept this concept that we're all in this together and that we're all in this together for the planet as well.
Subscribe to the Morning Energy newsletter at politico.com/morningenergy. And subscribe to this podcast for free on your favorite podcast player. You can listen to the show on your smart speaker. Just search for the Politico Energy Podcast. Thanks, and we'll be back again tomorrow.
Support for the Politico Energy Podcast comes from Chevron, partnering with California Bioenergy to transform farm waste into renewable natural gas and providing an alternative source of power for a cleaner way forward. For more information, visit chevron.com.